Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Today we have a guest with us from France, Thierry Durol, who joins us. I actually don't know where he is in France. I don't know if he wants to divulge that, but I know he's out on the countryside. But it's great to have you here, Thierry. Thank you so much for joining us today. How's everything on your end?
Hi. Well, thank you for the invitation, first and foremost. And I think it's going to be an interesting discussion.
We have a lot of things lined up here that we want to get into. A lot of recent news in France, some things that have happened. Of course, we have the famous case. It's kind of going international a little bit in terms of the police who were killed, four of them, by this guy who converted to Islam. We'll get into that later. We'll talk about the big fire in one of the industrial areas as well, what might be behind that. And then we have a little bit on Alain Soral and his jailing for 2 years for sharing that kind of as an anti-Zionist, anti-Rothschild, anti-banker, pro-yellow vest video, rap video, essentially. But tell us, introduce yourself a little bit to us. Not sure how many people know of your work, so share with us what you feel is pertinent.
Okay. Well, my name is Thierry Durol. I'm 31 years old, father of four, soon to be five.
Nice. Good job, man.
Thank you. Well, we try at least. I'm currently a journalist for identitarian magazines. The most famous in France would be Réfléchir et Agir. Think and act in English. I also belong and express tonight with as a member of Terre et Peuple, Soil and People, which is a organization created in 1994, active in 1995. Pagan-oriented, pro-European, in a good way, of course, work also for a small magazine called Solaria, which deals with European solar worshipping, like Mithraism, Apollo, every aspects of solar cults in Europe. That's for the, you know, the biggest and most important magazines I work for. I also contributed to some websites like Eurosynergie by my Belgian friend Robert Stuckers, and also Europe Maxima, Georges Feltentracol's website. Both very interesting websites. The first one has English text, very interesting text, but also in German, in Italian, in Spanish, and so on. So that's pretty much it, I guess.
All right, great. Yeah, a lot of things there. We can talk and plug some more of that here towards the end on the segments here. But yeah, let's just kind of dive into some of the recent news then, really. I think that's a good way to begin. France, of course, is in a very interesting situation, like a lot of other European countries, Western European countries primarily. Some things are kind of worse in France, and maybe some things are a bit better. We can get your analysis of that a bit later. But just to demonstrate some of these things, let's talk about the latest case of the four police officers that were killed inside of the police headquarters. There was an insider, a guy working, I think, in the IT department, which had converted to Islam. Tell us what you know about this.
That is a very interesting story. We usually, unfortunately, have a lot of aggressions in France related to Islam, whether it's like a lone wolf, like the media like to say, or it's more organized. This one is a bit of both, I suppose. I first heard the news the other day when it occurred that there was a killing in the Paris police headquarters. And the interesting fact is that the media first talked about a guy that was deaf, and working there for a lot of years. And they said that the motivation for his act was a love story or something like that. But quickly, we found out that it wasn't true, that it was a converted person converted to Islam, of course, and that he was having a meeting with his superior, a she superior, because he didn't want to shake hands with female colleagues, and so she also her superior wanted to talk about it with him, and that apparently it's when he started to stab her, and then he just, you know, continued his frenzy, and he was killed by police forces. So I think he killed four people, and he was the fifth one being killed. So that's the basic story. So we know that he converted to Islam for quite some time. He came. The guy is I will call him an Afro-French, meaning he comes from former colonies island used to belong to France. I think it was Martinique.
Yeah, Vider has a story here. Caribbean-born, they call him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So either Martinique or Guadeloupe, but I think it's Martinique. But never mind, not really important here. Maybe except if we consider the hatred for white people. It's pretty known that the locals there don't really like white people. But I'd like to point out first that the media tried to bring everybody in the wrong direction, you know, like, no, it's not another case of terrorism. It's just a love affair that went wrong. But it didn't, that version of the story didn't last very long. It's a kind of an irony that it happened in the police headquarters, you know. I wouldn't say it, but it would confirm the fifth column theory, you know, the fifth column of Islam, you know, mm-hmm. like an introduction by Islam. But what I found out today, because, you know, to prepare that interview, I obviously searched for some serious facts here. And one of the biggest French newspaper today explained that they're afraid, that the police is afraid that this guy actually got all the names of undercover agents in the radical mosques of France.
Mm, oops.
Putting police officers in danger.
Hmm.
You have to understand that this guy had access to all the passwords, all the emails, pretty much all important information. So, as you say, oops.
Oops. Yeah, exactly, because that could be very detrimental if there are insiders or people that are trying to maybe monitor or see some of these radicalizing mosques out there. Then their lives could be in danger, obviously, if they have some inside, if they're working as an agent or something like that.
Yeah, I do believe this guy wasn't a genius, but it's kind of obvious that, you know, when you're in power to have access to this kind of information, and that you work for another organization and an enemy organization, it's obvious that you will get sensible information in order to, you know, make your agenda, you know, going onward. So
This is why it's a good point. You know, people don't think of that too. Many naive people in the West, they just think, I mean, this is not news to people like you and me, but to your average people out there, newcomers, normies, that they just think that we can bring in all these people, and they can be from different religions or different countries, and they'll just kind of adapt into our systems. But the fact is, you know, when we give them jobs, specifically intelligence or even within police and stuff like that, likelihood is that they, you know, if they do have grievances against us and they have an identifying factor, be that a religion or an ethnicity, then that would easily be a person which is a liability. They would steal information. They would try to, you know, anything that benefits, you know, their agenda, so to speak. And the same thing happened in America recently with this Chinese person that was handing out information, intelligence about the FBI and stuff like that. It was working as a double agent. So these things are commonplace now all over the West with individuals that come in, be them Islamic or just from another country, and they just they get these positions and high up and stuff, and we're just trusting this and think, it's fine, don't worry about it. It's tremendously naive, I'd say.
Well, probably Europeans are just naive. It's probably not nature. But here, it also confirms the level of, I can call it stupidity from the police department, because when you are able to hire people like this guy, you're not very clever. And it also confirms that the police in general lowered their criteria when they hire. And that was, I actually have a friend working as a police officer in Paris, just a basic police function, keeping buildings and stuff like this. And I asked him information about the exam to enter the police school and everything, and he told me it's frightening how low the expectation is. And even when it comes to, for example, shooting, you have to understand that in France, a gun enthusiast probably shoots more than a regular police officer. So you have more chance to have a competent citizen using a gun than a policeman. So that's the kind of situation we have in France. So it's also goes hand in hand with the integration, this positive act, you call it in America, if I'm correct. We call it positive discrimination in France. We should hire this guy not because he's good, but because he's black, or because she, he, or it is transgender, whatever.
Affirmative action, right?
Yeah, that's the word.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm, gotcha.
We call it positive discrimination in France.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. At least they're more honest about it, I guess.
Yeah, it says it all. I remember, by the way, that story in England, that there was a candidate to the police that was told he couldn't enter the police because he was white and heterosexual,
yep.
And that had to go to the court to complain. It shows perfectly how degenerate the Western world became.
And we have the same in Sweden, by the way, too, where they intentionally go out and say, like, no, ethnic Swedes, we don't want that. We want minorities, we want Muslims, we want, Arabs or Africans or something like that. And I guess they do that too because they want those kinds of people to police their neighborhoods and their own areas, right? Which is very interesting. I even heard, I don't want to derail too quickly here, but just a quick note on that. Bernie Sanders, just a few weeks ago, it was some kind of presidential debate or something. He was talking about the importance of having, these, what they call minorities, which of course are majorities, most of these other ethnic groups, if you look at it globally, but they have to have people that look like them, that polices them and stuff like that. And it was interesting because it's like, he would think would solve racism, I guess, which is like, well, it's interesting because that's what we used to have. We used to have countries that were all one ethnic group. And so that way, when the police came around or there was a court case or some whatever it was in the legal system, racism would never be an issue because all of the people that was part of this process was of the same ethnic group, right? So it's like it's this miraculous thing now they're starting to realize that, hey, wait a minute. What if we have those people kind of creating an enclave of their own people inside of our countries, a kind of a colony, and that way they can police themselves, they can be the judges. What I'm talking about. It's pathetic. It's ridiculous. And that they're against people having a nation of their own. When you say, well, nationalism is the solution to all this racism, they think you're crazy and that you're evil for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think those people, they never read Aristotle, because even Aristotle at his time, I think it's, I don't have the English version of this book. I think it's The Laws or The Politics. I can't remember the right translation, but basically Aristotle claimed that you can't have a working state or at the time a city-state, working with a non-homogeneous people there.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's just common sense, you know, just being not stupid. But we both know that the people in higher position, they have their own agenda, and that's not the way they want things to happen.
Exactly. I mean, they're not honestly looking for solutions. They are trying to wiggle around an issue of like population replacement, right, or substitution of the population, and then they're trying to find different ways of kind of mitigating that the chaos or the fallout that arises from that situation, and then they offer that up as solutions, which is of course ridiculous. Yeah,
exactly. In this I would call it the strategy, we have in France a famous author named Laurent Oberton, who wrote a interesting novel called Guerilla. And the second volume came out recently in France, and it's basically a novel about the fall of France in 3 days, with a police incident in those ethnic suburbs, and the whole country falls down because the Oberton put the Islamist in it and everything. And the second volume, you see that there's a politician that is put in charge by the government, because the president in the first volume has been killed. And this person in charge of what's left of France is thinking of letting the chaos going on, and then when it's the right time to stop the chaos and appear like the hero, like we put an end to the chaos and the murders and everything. We the Republic, we are the solution, you know. And that's exactly what they want to do. It's a simple strategy, but it works, because if you are naive, if you don't look into the details and everything, you would feel, you know, like, yeah, these guys are right. These guys are doing the right thing. But no, they created the chaos, and of course we have the solutions to it. So it's always the same strategy, basically, you know. I think one important concept to understand is that the enemy, the first enemy, is not like the immigration, Islam, and so on. That's just a tool which is used against us. And when I mean us, I mean white European people. The enemy is elsewhere. The enemy is in France. His name is Macron, for example. But it's just, again, he's just a pawn at a certain level, you know?
Yeah.
And, for example, all these people, they are very happy to have immigrants to work, in the kitchens, in the back, at the back of the restaurants. They're pretty happy to have them cleaning the streets, and so on. But these immigrants and Islamists and everything, they are tools, and they don't understand it, and they're a tool against us. So that's a kind of a tricky situation for us, because we have to fight two different fronts when we can fight, you know, because most of the time we have our hands tied when we can't do anything, or at least we have to do it in another way and be more clever. But that's another story here, maybe. But
you're talking about fighting back in the information war, the campaigns that are effectively waged against European people. And exactly, I mean, our hands are tied in the sense that we can't say certain words, we can't call a spade a spade. Even when we effectively find the right words to describe what's going on, they seek to criminalizing those words, kind of like replacement, right? I mean, it was a Frenchman who came up with the great replacement. His name escapes me now, but that's right, Camus, right? Yeah, he was the one who came up with that, and so. That has been on the forefront for a long time in France, as in many other Western European countries as well. But you see now what's happening, because, you know, either it's legitimate or it's not. Either it's a false flag or it's not. Either it's sincere individuals that go out and spurg out, and they do something really stupid and violent in the name of, you know, what they see is happening. Then the establishment can clamp down on whatever words he used or whatever website he visited or whatever. They can almost criminalize all of that. You see, you know, you saw that after like the El Paso shooting and stuff, and The synagogue shooting in California, if they left a manifesto and they said, oh, there's a population replacement going on, they think, oh, these people think it's population replacement. We have to criminalize this terminology. They can't use it anymore, you know?
They'll try everything to shut us down. That's obvious. Almost like George Orwell's noveling, is it the word in English?
Novel, yeah, it's novel.
But you know this new language where it's forbidden to use certain words. We say in France you can't. We have to call a cat, meaning that we have to. If I see a tree, I wouldn't say it's a car or basic common sense in not being too stupid. But the information war is very important, and that brings in the internet censorship. That's another area where our masters, so to speak, wants to control everything. And if you want to see the future of the internet, I would advise you to check China, for example.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
For example, in France, they will apply this facial recognition technology. So they will be able to know where you are, what you do at any moment. Well, maybe not in the countryside where I live, except if they put little cameras on the deers and the birds and everything to spy on me, or my family. But, they obviously do it through internet.
Did you see, I don't want to derail this now, but did you see the latest China thing? You know, the stuff in Hong Kong has been happening. There's a fight with the NBA. They want to run that over there. There was a South Park episode criticizing China's, you know, censorship and stuff like that. And what's the response? They ended up banning South Park and the creators. and there's even depictions of Winnie the Pooh are banned in China because... They said that it looked like Xi Jinping, the leader there, so they banned. So people are starting to intentionally use Winnie the Pooh, iconography and symbols and stuff like that because it pisses him off, apparently. But it's total clown world with this shit. But it's an important note because the establishment and most of these major corporations that are now the language police against us. I mean, Facebook is international, YouTube is international, Twitter is international, right? They are more than happy to work together with China to appease them and to run by their rules and shit like that, while they're actually putting people in prison camps and in cages, like a million and a half people right now. The Islamic population over there are literally like in prison camps. But they moralize over us when we use words to describe like our lived experiences.
Mm. Well, yeah, China, I believe, has its part to play in the new world order.
Yes, they do.
They probably don't fit the criteria of the Western countries like France or the USA. They don't probably have the same criteria, but when it comes to economy, for example, everybody, you know, knows how to work hand in hand. So, but I think I saw that South Park thing, but not for the same reason than China. So that's not important.
Right, right. No, it's just a side note, just to hammer a little bit of this absurdity that we have. Global elites that are more than happy to work together with China, but then dare to criticize us for just trying to essentially describe what it is that's happening. And again, just participate in the political discourse and say, hey, we don't agree with this. We don't like multiculturalism. We don't like open borders. It's creating an uncertain future for us and for our children. We don't agree with these policies. Let us vote on these issues. Ask the people what they want. You know, all these basic fundamental points you think that an open, democratic, so-called free society would be totally fine with, but that's they're not now. You know what I mean? They're totally totalitarian now. So,
Yeah, you're definitely right, Henrik, here. Every naive person would believe that in democracy you can express every opinion that you want, but that's not the case. We don't believe in democracy. We don't live in democracy, and I don't believe in democracy.
I don't either. Clearly, look at it now. Look at where it led us, right?
Yeah, we can't say whatever we want, and that's important. It's a militant act to make people see the reality of free speech, for example.
Yeah.
But you know what? Everybody knows it. I mean, I can obviously talk about French people here. You can sometimes talk about sensitive topics like immigration. And it's funny because the first thing a French man would say is, I'm not racist, but. I'm not racist, but, you know, we are so fed up with those Arabic people. You know, it's, I'm not racist. My wife is Portuguese, for example. You know, that's the kind of thing I can hear. But I'm like, she's white. You know that. I know Portugal has a more complex story about its colonies and everything, but she's mostly a white person like you and me. So
of course, Portuguese people are white. It's funny.
No, that's the kind of when you're being oppressed so much. I mean, on an intellectual level, people develop this kind of defenses. Like I'm not anti-Semite, but you know, it can work with everything. You know, I'm not against nature, but you know, it shows how people are, or people have to be careful with what they say, because it's like you have this big brother watching you from your back. You're just, you know, looking at it like, am I allowed to say that? Is it okay? You know, because it's you mentioned Alain Soral in the jail story. It's exactly the same thing. When you get into that story, well, we will do that later, but when you get into the story, it shows how there's no justice. It's a simulacre. It's like democracy. It's big words thrown at us, like, it's democracy, something you believe you could stand for, but it's just an illusion. As Alain Soral would say, you can say everything you want, but you have to pay for that.
That's right, exactly. You have to end up in jail. Why don't we dive into that now, then, and talk about that? So we, Lana and I spoke about this in the Weekend Warrior show. Definitely check that out if you missed it. We did a kind of a looking at the video and stuff too. But for those who haven't seen that yet, Alain Soral sentenced to 2 years in jail for sharing a Gilets Jaunes anti-Rothschild rap video. Now, we should say that it was very, it was anti-Zionist. There was political, you know, messages in there, but there's no one was hurt, believe it or no one was injured. No one died, believe it or not. They managed to do this rap video and criticize a lot of people in the ruling class, the banking establishment, the media. I guess we could play a little bit in the background here of the video while we talk about this too. But I would assume you saw the video, but what should be pointed out is he did not create the video. He just shared the video like he did with hundreds of other videos. So tell us what you know about what actually happened here.
I actually didn't see the video because I didn't have the time nor the internet working for that.
And I think they banned it too, by the way, immediately. Like, there's only a few places where it was viewable after that. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. First and foremost, you have to understand who is Alain Soral, because your listeners, viewers might not know who
probably
he is.
Probably not, no.
So Alain Soral is pretty famous in France, even if he doesn't appear on TV shows anymore. He used to. This guy comes from fashion mod, the mod fashion milieu, like the clothing and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He started as I wouldn't say a specialist, but a journalist specialized in the fashion and everything. And he was also at the time politically involved, but in the Communist Party. He always claimed his that you always claimed about belonging to the Communist Party years and years ago. And he suddenly, I wouldn't say, maybe he probably swallowed the red pill at some point. I don't know what happened really, but he started to see some problems with Zionism. Because in France, I would simply say that there's a strong Jewish community and a strong Jewish lobby and Zionist lobby working in the media, in the, you know, the usual areas of the society where you can find Jewish people. In high places, liberals and everything, liberal professions, sorry. And so little by little, I would say he turned towards nationalist ideas, pretty much. And he created some years ago an association called Égalité et Réconciliation, so Equality and Reconciliation.
That's right.
Which I must say did some interesting work. He was very famous for doing videos on YouTube, and very, very famous. And Alain Soral talked about a lot of different subjects. Very interesting. I personally do not agree on everything, especially on his reconciliation theme, which is for him his idea that the elite is trying, the global elite is trying to put white people against what he would say, good immigrants, good Muslims, for example, that share the love for France, for its culture and everything. And he wants just to avoid a racial civil war, basically. So that's for the basic idea of who is Alain Soral and what he stands for. So his association is very famous in France. Of course, it's not something you can easily talk at lunch with your uncle or your colleague at work, but he is famous, like Dieudonné, the famous comedian. They both work together. They used to work together. And, they are accused of being anti-Semites because they criticize the Rothschild, they criticize Zionism, they criticize the Jewish lobby in France and everywhere in the world. And so as you mentioned, no one has been killed in that story. He just, I don't even know if he personally shares this video. I know in a similar story occurred with a drawing that he shared on his Facebook or Twitter, and he was sentenced to jail also for that, for the same reason. So, am I surprised of that? I wouldn't say, I would say definitely not, because, again, we don't have a true justice here in France. At least it is, depending on which side you stand, when you're a nationalist, a identitarian, anti-globalist, even at some point, I would say it is possible sometimes a clever lefty, you would be on the wrong side, and you will have the justice against you, that's for sure. If you come from Africa, you're an immigrant, it's not the same story, of course. And Alain Soral now is paying the price of just pointing the finger at a certain direction. I'm not saying he's right or wrong. He's just pointing the finger at a certain direction, and that direction is not the correct.
It's lashing out immediately too, right? There was a number of groups that had got together to sue him. I guess it was anti-racist groups and stuff like that. He's ordered to pay was it 45,000 euros in addition to his prison sentence and things like that.
Yeah, they try to kill him economically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's what they do. They try to shut you down that way. It's punishing you.
Yeah,
That's
another way to have your mouth shut. And it's, of course, the Jewish organizations that are always, it's always the same people. I mean, always, probably the same attorneys at every court. I'm pretty sure of that, because it's the specialty of these people, you know. And Alain Soral knows it too well, unfortunately for him. I don't know if he will go to jail. It's possible. I don't believe he would flee the country or something. But he's not the only one to face such a sentence. I'm thinking about someone like Hervé Rissen, who wrote a lot of books about Judaism also. Usually when you have certain degrees of evilness, you don't pay the same price for criticizing Islam or the Jews, you know. It's the reality. I do believe you can have a reasonable view on Jewish identity and Zionism and everything, not falling stupidly into I would say two obvious categories and everything, but now it's just if you criticize just a little bit, you start to be demonized. Like you criticize Israel, oh, now you're an anti-Semite, and it's going in a such extent that now anti-Zionism is considered as anti-Semitism in France.
It's criminalized, and people are literally put in jail for criticizing that.
Yeah. It has been the legislation, changed recently about that. Mm. Because they want. Again, I can't deny there's a strong and a powerful Jewish community in France. And in France, you have to understand, it's not like in the U.S. In the U.S., lobbies are well accepted. It's normal. In France, when you read the Constitution, it's supposed to have no lobbies. It's forbidden, but it exists, of course. It doesn't say its name, but it's a lobby. When you try to you invite people and trying to make them say things for you, like, you know, Israel, it's very interesting, and it could be a very good economical partner. To me, it's lobbying, you know, it's just a fact, like it or not. So that's the thing. Alain Soral is pointing the finger at those kind of things. I don't believe he's a lunatic anti-Semite. I don't believe that at all. I think he can discriminate between a certain kind of globalist and Jew like Bernard-Henri Lévy from just a regular guy that just doesn't want to have any trouble, just to have his life as normal as everybody else in France. So it works in France. It's a very delicate topic, and I'm not even talking about questions like what they call negationism and things like this. It's even worse. But I think what is most important in that story is not like the subject itself, like anti-Semitism or not. It's the justice here.
Exactly. Being able to levy this criticism and not being reprimanded for it. And then in addition, of course, which is always an important angle to take, but if they're trying to prove that these groups don't hold power or are not influential, then it's funny that they always come out of the woodwork and with the wrath of the whole legal system are able to persecute the people that bring attention to this supposed power that doesn't exist. That kind of the same story every time that happens. And of course, we should also mention weaved into this then is this the support for like the yellow vests and kind of the overall very, very popular movement in France now to criticize the establishment, whatever direction that goes as well. It kind of is a yellow vests have had a pretty broad scope in terms of like the things that they have been talking about. It's been a very kind of interesting movement to watch actually, but it feels like the establishment is afraid of a popular uprising. And they certainly would not, I think, would want to have someone like Alain Sorrell to bring that into as a common talking point within the Yellow Vests, that type of criticism, I would assume.
I think they want to avoid a gathering of certain kind of populist movements in France, like the Gilets Jaunes and anti-assisted procreation movements, for example. I guess the government is now afraid and aware of the anger that is occurring in France for so long, and that turned into the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest movement, which is a movement which is hard to analyze since, as you mentioned, it's a large scope there, and there's some, I would say, common topics people agree on, like we pay too much taxes, but everybody in France thinks that, because that's true. You pay so many taxes for whatever, you know. I mean, it's crazy. And of course, the wages never increase. I mean, everything increase in France, talking about the prices, also immigration, but the wages never increase. So in the retirement pensions never increase as well. So it's so that's why people are angry.
Yep.
I don't know, one quarter or one third of your budget goes into fuel, so you can go to work. People start to be angry because they can't go do shopping, they can't go to the cinema, they can't do whatever they want. And
yes, it's shut up, slave, pay your bills and stay at home and don't do anything. Now, I do want to talk about this a little bit more in the next segment. We're going to take a break here just in a minute or two, and weaved into this, of course, the original the way that the Yellow Vest came about was, as you said, it was over the gas prices, the taxes and stuff like that, because you have this climate change nonsense kind of weaved into this, that they're like, they're going to try to make sure that people are not driving any cars, and, you know, they have to pay to, like, you know, carbon taxes and all this madness, which the globalists are kind of set to try to implement here with the aid of Greta Thunberg, by the way, and we'll see if we can talk about that too. But let us know if there's anything. Give us the websites and stuff where people can go to read your work. And I know that none of it, I believe, is in English, but regardless, we do have people from France listening and stuff like that. If they're not familiar with your work, tell us where they can go to visit your various projects.
Okay. So for French readers, I would advise them to check on the Terre et Peuple website that you are showing right now. They can also check the magazine Réfléchir et Agir. They can find it in most of newspaper booths in France. Concerning English listeners and readers, I remember I wrote some articles in English for Robert Stoecker's website called Eurosynergie. It was, from what I recall, it was probably, if I remember, it was reviews from Julius Evola books and Ludwig Klag's books. From what I remember, I wanted for a long time to write articles. I mean, more in-depth articles about doctrine and the topics I really care about, like paganism, ecology, and things like this. Probably, I will do it in the future. But in the meantime, well. That's pretty much all I can advise them to check out, basically, you know. They probably might find some articles in English as well on the Terre et Peuple website.
Okay.
Some editorials from the magazine. I know that sometimes there was a guy who translated them for English readers. So, hey, you definitely check it out.
Yeah, I'm seeing you sharing a video, and I forget the site's name now. I've seen many documentaries and stuff. One of the massive megalithic sites in France. What is that called again? That your latest post that you had there, that site?
There's several interesting sites in France. I think one of the biggest is in Brittany. It's called Carnac.
That's right. Carnac, is it? Yeah, Carnac, which is kind of sounds like the Egypt word for it, which is kind of interesting.
They also found one in my native region in Auvergne. They just found it's a very fresh archaeological discovery in Auvergne, in Vermonton. That's the name of the city, and they didn't obviously have all the information, but from what they dug out, it seems to be a big site. A site like Carnac.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, I didn't know that. All right, well, we'll see if we can tie some of that in a little bit too. In part two, we're going to continue, folks, at redicemembers.com, as we do with these little bit longer interview shows. So join us over there for part two. Check out some of the website. We'll have links down below to Thierry's stuff that he's working on and things like that too. But much more coming up in part two. Stay with us. We'll be right back, everybody.